He says that one day, so it was customary for the believers when Baha'u'llah was freed from prison, or before he went to the prison, in different towns, whether it was in Adrianople, whether it was in Baghdad, whether it was in Akka even. Sometimes the believers would invite Baha'u'llah, and occasionally he would accept that invitation to go and visit them. And there, of course, they would prepare a food or a simple tea or something. Even in the barracks of Akka, in the very prison of Akka, when restrictions were relaxed in that prison, the believers who had their quarters in separate places, they sometimes would put together all the little rations they had, and they would prepare a very nice, or relatively nice, shall we say, refreshments, and would beg Baha'u'llah to come to them and take part in that. And Baha'u'llah sometime would accept and would go. One of these believers says that when he was in Akka, when he was in Bahji, Baha'u'llah accepted their invitation to come to their little room. And one day he came. And then after some time that he sat there and he talked, and then he went back. And he said, as Baha'u'llah left our place, he told us not to follow him. He said, stay where you are. And he and some of those who were accompanying him went. He said, I looked from the back of Baha'u'llah, and I saw the majesty, which is indescribable majesty. An indescribable majesty that he could not describe it from the back. In fact, some people see the majesty of a person from his back. I know this. My wife does this anyhow. She is very much in love with the picture of Abdul Baha, that you can see his back. And he thinks, she loves that picture more than anything else. To see the majesty of walk. This man says, I saw the majesty of Baha'u'llah. And he says to himself, oh, I wish the kings and rulers were here to see that majesty. And the next day, when he goes into the presence of Baha'u'llah, this man, as soon as Baha'u'llah sees him and tells him to be seated, he turns to him and he said, if the kings and rulers come today, here, who would let you in this place? There would be no room for you here. You people wouldn't be allowed to come here then. If the kings and rulers were coming into the faith, who would let you in? He says, this is your day. This is the day of the meek and the humble. He says, the kings and rulers will come in the future. So really and truly, we must thank Baha'u'llah for having given us this great revelation and has enabled us to recognize him in this day. It's a great, great bounty. The more you think of it, the more you look at the history of the faith, the history of his revelation, the more you realize what a great day it is, and what a bounty, which is indescribable, that he has given to us. So now, you know whose words you're reading. You can see a little bit of the ocean, that like the drop who saw the ocean. If you really dwell upon these subjects, read the dispensation of Baha'u'llah, read those few pages at the back of the Advent of Divine Justice, read the history of his revelation, we get a little glimpse of the of that. It's entirely up to us. Whenever we are moved, we say a prayer. You can now stand up and say a prayer here. That's all right. Or go at home and say a prayer whenever you like it. But the obligatory prayers is a law of Baha'u'llah, and we must say it in the manner which is prescribed. And it is this which makes it sound to us as foreign. Because Baha'u'llah has given, enjoined upon us, certain genuflections in this prayer, in this rite. As you know, there are three types of obligatory prayers, or four types really. Three of them are for the living, and one of them is for the dead. One of the obligatory prayers which we say for the dead, in which there is a refrain, you know, there are
some refrains that you keep on repeating. That's an obligatory prayer. It's not just an ordinary prayer. If there is a Baha'i funeral, that is a must. The others, doesn't matter if you say a prayer or other prayers or not, it doesn't matter. But that is an essential part of the ritual of burying the dead, of the funeral. Baha'u'llah has forbidden the saying of obligatory prayers in public. You have to say it in private, in the privacy of your own room. Whereas that of the dead, that for the dead, you can say it in public. The obligatory prayers, as you know, there are three of them. One of them is the long obligatory prayer, which is a very beautiful prayer. And one of them is the medium one, and one of them is the short one. The long one, of course, you say it once in every 24 hours. The medium one, you say it three times a day, certain times, morning, noon, night. The shortest one, which is the simplest of all, really, it's a very simple thing, and Baha'u'llah, through his bounty, has been very, very kind to us. To some businessmen who are so busy, they have no time for these things. They can say it at noon if they remember it. And he says if they forgot it, they could go up to sunset. So it's quite a good extension for them. It's only two lines. You remember that. And there is no genuflections either. But it is an obligatory prayer. It's one of the rituals of the faith. But the other ones have some genuflections. Now there are conditions for saying the obligatory prayer, as I said. One of the conditions is that you must be alone. Why must you be alone? You will see in a few minutes when I explain this to you. When we talk about these genuflections, these actions that you do, that really this is a place for doing it between you and your God. There can be no other person there. Because there you are going to prostrate yourself in front of your God. You see? And you are going to confess throughout the whole of the prayer to our own shortcomings, to our sins, to our transgressions, to our remoteness from Him. Beg Him to bring us close to Him. And these are the things which are very private. The only occasion that I would consider, and this is my personal view and experience, that you can say it when there is somebody else there, is when your children are there. I feel parents should say the obligatory prayers in front of their children, so that they take it as an example. We learnt it anyhow as Baha'i children. When most people who have been brought up in the East, in Baha'i families, you will ask them, they say, yes, when I was 10 years of age, I memorized it because I've heard it so much, every day. It becomes a part of you then. One of the conditions for saying the obligatory prayers is that you must turn your face towards the Qibla, which is the shrine of Baha'u'llah. The whole world turns to him. It's a tremendous thought that all mankind, and eventually the whole of the human race, one day, when they all recognize him, they all will turn. Just like to the hub of the wheel, you know? Everyone. And this brings unity. Everyone turns to the shrine of Baha'u'llah, wherever you are. Now, these genuflections that must go with it, with the long and the medium obligatory prayers, they are symbolic. Baha'u'llah has tried to add to our words, which are, for instance, you're supplicating to God something. Supplicating means you're begging Him to do something for you. And He has introduced these symbolic actions. You raise your hand when you supplicate to God. When you want to express your humility to Him, utter humility and utter nothingness to who? To God. To your Creator. Not to man, but to Creator. That's why you're alone. You prostrate yourself before your God. And you say those words indicating your utter nothingness and your humility before Him. And that raises our consciousness with these actions. of what we are really saying to our God. We are doing it, we are showing it in action. It heightens one's consciousness of the words, provided we can understand this. Well, so you see how important this is to us, the obligatory prayers, to become used to become familiar with it, and knowing it's not something which is done in the public, but you do it in private. Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha have told us that if the believers do not say their obligatory prayers, they can never get close to Baha'u'llah. No matter what else you do, this is one of those conditions. And we Baha'is in the West have to become used to this. I know some people in the West now, at least the countries that I've been familiar with, particularly in Ireland. I know many, many believers in Ireland. I know believers who will never go to bed unless, even if it's midnight, dead tired, and the woman or man thinks he hasn't said his prayers, obligatory prayers, he says now, he must say it. With this we can grow. So you see, this is another point which I wanted to bring up. For we were trying to enable our faith to grow, wasn't it? The whole idea was to see what should we do that our faith may grow. Well, this is the second step, really. Or the first step. This should be the first step. And reciting the writings become the second step. But they are of similar nature. Now, prayers, we can say when you like it. And then comes the study of the writings. Now, study of the writings and reciting the writings are two different things. We must not confuse them. Because when you recite the writings in the morning and in the evening, you are really taking your personal food, your spiritual food. Although you learn from it as well, I'm sure you learn a lot of things. But the purpose of it is not to learn things. When you are reciting the words, the purpose is to receive the spiritual food. This is the communication receiving from your Creator. And you are eating your spiritual food. But studying of the writings is a different thing. You have to sit down, read, take a book, read the writings, see what it says, what it means. Read another book to understand this part that you don't understand. Ask from somebody a question, what does this mean? Read the history of the faith. Join these things together. Go and make research. Ask from people. Take part in seminars. This is where we study the writings. And the more we do that, the study of the writings will enable us to see more and more of the greatness of that ocean I was telling you. The ocean of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. If you want to see that ocean like the drop did, you remember the drop of the rain when it saw the ocean. If you want to see that, you have to study the writings. And one of the very important things we must study are the words of Shoghi Effendi. Because Shoghi Effendi plays a very, very significant part in the revelation of Baha'u'llah. And I will explain to you what his position is in relation to the words. It's a very significant role that he has played. If you had been a very knowledgeable Baha'i, now I had seen some very knowledgeable Baha'is who had come from the East, who had read great, great many of the writings of Baha'u'llah. And by the way, let me say this much, that I don't think there is anybody in the world, anybody who can say he has read all the writings of Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha and Shoghi Effendi. We certainly do not have such a person. You can't keep it in your mind anyhow, except Mr. Anderson. He has got all the indexing done, and he's marvelous, really, marvelous. But you'll forget it, and you read it, and you'll have to... There's nobody who can say he has read everything. I was so delighted to see Ted here. I'd seen him, met him about 12 years ago in Canada, and it was a very beautiful experience to go and see him. And now it was great joy to see him at the airport when I arrived. You know, I'm going to miss you all when I'm going there to Europe. How am I going to do it? I don't know. It's such a beautiful experience to come and meet with all the beautiful faces here. And it was a great privilege and joy for me to see today some of your early believers, the first believer and the first native believer. You do not realize who they are. Of course, they are the most humble, servants of Baha'u'llah. But you know, history will record this in the future. And I'm sure the historians will want to know who were these people, what were they like, what they were doing. And the same thing with all of you, with all pioneers in every town, those who pioneer from town to town. And they go there and establish the foundation of the community in the future. They are not going to find out who were our politicians and our great figures in history, as we call them today. These days that we are going through are the darkest period in the history of mankind. You realize this? The darkest period that ever was or that ever shall be is the period that now we are in it, and we shall be in it for quite a few years. The darkest period of man's life. And people will not want to know who were these people who were running for election. You'd run in here for elections. In England, they stand for elections. You know that. This is the difference. You run, and there they stand for it. But anyhow, all these things will be considered as so much part of the old order. But what will be remembered is the wonderful band, the small band, or a lonely person of Baha'is who have been in localities and places and towns, villages, far, far remote areas of the world, trying to build up, and they built up eventually, and we will build up great, great institutions for mankind. And then they want to know who were these people. And if they find a little scrap of paper, if they ever come across it, that there is a little information about that, they are going to grab it from each other to know something about you people. So really, we are very, very privileged to be inheriting the kingdom of God, the weak and the humble, inheriting this great kingdom. Well, we are talking of other things. Now the time is coming to an end. And I feel that we should consider these two points that I've mentioned today about our ways by which we can grow spiritually, get closer to Baha'u'llah. And if you are going to be with us tomorrow, I'm going to say something to you that, and I'll leave it with you to think about it, that if you read the writings and if you say your prayers in this way, the obligatory prayers, and turn to Baha'u'llah, this is not going to be sufficient. We have to do other things. This is not the end of it. We have to do other things as well. And particularly, I'm going to mention something tomorrow, which if you don't do it, then all the things that you've done will be of no use. And these things are so close together. Now, don't let it be a cliffhanger or something till tomorrow, but let us wait, and we hope that we can continue in this series. There are some questions people have asked in here which are not considered, which is not part of this, but I want to also bring up some other points as well, which is not to do with this, how we enable our faith to grow, but other subjects which are part of it again. And we hopefully will bring it up tomorrow. Now, there is only 10 minutes left, or something like that. And I think you should say something now, if you want to. If there is any questions or some points that you want to raise. Yes?
Well, because we've gone all the way without questions, I have to do one more than 25. Can you explain a little more what you mean by praying without desire? I came across your statement on that. Very similar to what you're saying now. And I never understood that. In fact, up until that point, I thought, well, here it is. I've never seen it all laid out so well, how you actually acquire Baha'i characteristics of the life, acquire sort of thing. So I read that, and I said, well.
No, you see.
Praying without desire, well, I don't know what that means. So
now, I'll explain this to you as best as I can. First of all, You can pray in any way you like, with all the desires in the world that you have in it. There's nothing wrong with that. We have to do that in most cases.